Three, two, one.
It's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
I'm Carissa, and
we're going to interview each other because we haven't done that in a while.
Like a long time. Weird the 3-2-1 is when we're not in the same room.
I know, I don't like it.
It's so awkward.
It'll never be right.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Kayla.
Hello, Carissa.
How are you doing? How have you been?
I am well. I am on tour, and we're currently in Winnipeg, Canada. It is cold, and we've just sort of been everywhere. Lots of California, lots of, I don't remember where else, but many places. And then we've got a massive chunk still to come where we're just everywhere that's cold. So that's fun. How are you?
I am good. I'm in Chicago. It's also cold. This is my downtime between two shows today because we did a early morning corporate show at the lounge and then I'm working the late bar. So I have a few hours off in between to do this, clean the apartment, and then go back to work.
Great.
Yeah. It's great.
Your face says both, I performed today and I'm tired.
Those are both true things. That's because I have like half the Lucy makeup on, but it's all smeared down one side of my face. Yeah. I am a cartoon of my inside feelings right now.
That's great. I'll be honest. I've been sort of popping around the last couple of days for press. So I've been in a lot of different time zones and weathers and such. But I've had two nights of really fantastic sleep. So I think this is the most well-rested and like most energetic I've felt in a really long time. So for the first time, I'm saying on Shazam, I'm not tired. How great is that? Sorry, Chris is mad now.
No, I'm very happy for you.
Was Canadian, wasn't it?
I am actually very happy for you. You deserve a full night's sleep. And I will have mine on next Tuesday.
Genuinely, I'm going to throw out an ad here for a sponsor that we don't have, which is Gravity Blankets. I have one now. And I don't understand how I slept ever before that. And the reason is I never did sleep before a gravity blanket. And now if I don't have my gravity blanket, I don't sleep. And it is genuinely fantastic. I cannot recommend it more. And I just have like the little 15-pound one. But wow, is it great. So that's very helpful.
Yeah, it's like having a big Bowie on top of you all night. Oh, or a half a Bowie. About half a Bowie.
Oh, like a quarter to a fifth of a Bowie, that's for sure. He's got a big head. Hey, I have a really fun story to share with you.
I cannot wait. You sort of prompted me to this, and I've been pretty much just biding my time to get to this story, Kayla.
I'm bouncing. I'm so excited. Okay. So I had what is officially the greatest day of my career happened the other day. We, as the Champions of Magic, performed a show for 350 people in the San Quentin Maximum Security Prison.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was the greatest day of my life.
Were these prisoners?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Let me tell you. It was great. So all of the 300 to 350 prisoners, they were all there are like levels when you go into prison. So you get sort of a point system in San Quentin. And most of the guys had come in at a level 4, which is basically the worst. The level after that is death row. So when you're at level 4, you've done a bad thing. And then you can kind of work your way down in the point system. And then most of the people we were performing for were level 2. And then occasionally there were like some level 1s. And those were the guys that were near being able to go home. And so we performed for these guys, and I went in and I performed my what's called date night routine.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
Oh my goodness, Kayla.
Yep. Which opening bit is basically my dad was a cop, et cetera, et cetera. And then there are lots of jokes about my dad being a police officer. And so when I said my dad was a cop, and then I just changed some of the script, obviously. So I said, my dad was a cop. Sorry. And then the whole place was like, oh, yeah, okay, great. And then when each – I won't describe the routine necessarily, but basically what happens is you pick an envelope. It's bank night. And then you open it up and there's a reason that you didn't win, and the reason always pertains to my parents. And most of them are about my dad being a cop. And so one was, you didn't pass my dad's background check. And so these prisoners are opening up these things, and one says, it didn't work out because you didn't pass my dad's background check. And the place erupted. And I was like, I've never gotten this reaction for this routine ever before. This is amazing. And so that went over very well. Our escape artist, Fernando, he was also very well loved. His opening line was, I'm an escape artist. I'll be taking questions later, which was very funny. And then he did a wrapped escape. You saw this, Carissa, where he gets wrapped there with the saran wrap around a pole. And he goes, I'm going to need one of you to wrap me up to this pole. And there was a transgendered woman there. And she was like, me. So she gets up and the whole place was just like, yeah, Lisa. Woohoo. And so she starts wrapping Fernando around the pole and she just turns to everyone and goes, y'all know I got this. And then just keeps and it was so awesome. It was so much fun. I've never seen a reaction to magic. Young and Strange did the cardboard box, Hans Marti's cardboard box. Mm-hmm. This first stick goes in the box and the whole place was like, oh, no. And once I figured I was going to go on, they're just like, no. And it was fantastic. And then afterwards, we had a tour of the prison. Mm-hmm. So we performed. We got the fastest standing ovation we've ever received. And in fact, later that night when we were performing at the theater, we got a slow standing ovation. And I just screamed, they stood faster in prison. I went over only very well with the four guys standing next to me. This man came up to me and he was like, hi, I really loved the show and everything. I'm actually like, and then you're not supposed to really ask, like we were told don't ask what they did to go in prison, which makes sense because they're people and not just criminals. And so we got to talking with some people, and then this man decided he wanted to share what he did. And his line to me was, I killed a cop just like your dad. I was like, oh, okay, thanks for sharing. And for a moment, I went, ooh, I don't know. Should I be – I don't know how this is going to go. And then I spent the entire day with him. Just the whole day, I just walked with him around the prison, you know, in the group and everything. But he was just the kindest. He's been in prison for 40-plus years. He's just the nicest man. And everybody we talked to was so – like, what is just really funny is, you know, they were just saying – oh, yeah, I killed this person. I killed that person. I did this thing. Like they were talking about the sandwich they ate for lunch. But you kind of just look at it and go, oh, yeah, it's something that they did. But it was so long ago and they have such different mindsets now and worldviews that you're like, oh, this is fascinating. But to think that somebody's been in prison for 40 plus years and has like never owned a cell phone and doesn't quite understand the internet. They all had computers and TVs and such. So there was some level of access to real world. But to sort of watch them, like we got to go in actual – they have like a cell that's for tours. It's almost like when you go on – when you see an apartment building and they have the one that's all set up so you can see how pretty it could be. So they have a cell that's like that. And we went in and we're like, it's small. And then we're going through the tour and our tour guide, who's just this lovely man, he's been working for the prison for like 15 some odd years. He's just a really cool guy. He brings us over and he goes, so this is the death row housing center. We house over, I'm trying to remember, I hope I get the statistic correct. We house over 500 inmates that are on death row who are combined responsible for over 3,000 deaths. Whew. So these are like big time guys, right? So they said, that's this building. And we don't really take tours in there for obvious reasons. But you guys are really great. You want to go in? And so we took a tour of the death row inmates center and saw where people live. Basically, they just live in these very small spaces for what will be the rest of their lives. And we see where they, you know, how the prison operates and everything. But what I found really interesting is that everybody was actually like, surprisingly, everybody that we talked to, maybe not so much the death row guys, but a lot of the guys that we were talking to that are just the regular prisoners there were just so kind and supportive and wonderful. And I didn't really have a preconceived notion on what this experience was going to be like. I'd never been in a maximum security prison before. And also, I understand that people aren't their bad decisions. How often do we talk about that on this podcast? So, one bad decision or a couple bad decisions don't define a person. And so I was happy to go in with that understanding of this experience. But what I found is that of what I found most interesting are two things. One is that everybody was just super supportive. Like, everybody was supportive of each other, and it didn't matter who you were or what you did or anything. It was just like, this was a community. It felt like a community of people, even down to the guards. Everyone was laughing, and it was fun, and everyone was just there to come to the show to have a good time, and it was great. And two was just, and this is a different conversation, but just to see the, and out of 350 inmates to come see the show, there were about 5 white people. And that wow. was like, oh, okay. Well, I think that's a really interesting definition of our justice system, isn't it? So I got onto conversations with the guys about that and about this experience and listened to their experience with the justice system. And it was really fascinating to listen to. And then just as a tiny little side note, do you know what didn't happen? Nobody touched me.
No sexual harassment.
I mean, not even that. It was like there was nothing. I got just handshakes. I left there and went, oh my God, I felt safer in San Quentin prison than I do at most magic conventions.
Oh no, it's true.
I mean, it was amazing. It was just like, it was so, everyone was, and I'm probably going to get crap for that statement, aren't I? But I'm going to say it as it's true. I left there and was like, let's go back. That was fun. These guys were great. At no point did I feel like I was in danger or nervous. I never even felt that leading up to it. It was just like, this is amazing. And so genuinely, I left there on like such a high, and I'm still on this high, still talking about the experience, remembering little things that were said. And it was so much fun and going in through and getting to see stuff that people never get to see and do, you know, perform in a prison. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. And so that's the story that I wanted to tell you.
It's a great story. I'm glad that you let me hear it cold on the podcast. Yay. The whole time you're talking, I was reminded of my grandfather, who was a guard at the penitentiary in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan for his whole life until he retired. So we used to get like fun stories from the pen. Of course, the Canadian justice system is going to be different. But I remember finding out only a few years ago, I think you and I have talked about this, but not on the podcast, that my uncle, this giant fun man who used to throw my brother and I around and like was so great, was one of the most notorious bank robbers Canada had ever seen. And my grandpa and my uncle had become good friends while he was incarcerated at the penitentiary. And when they let him out, he just kind of became part of our family, which like I found that out in my 20s and was like, oh, did I know this? Did my parents know this? Everybody just knew like. Okay, cool.
It's cool. So cool.
But it's also why, you know, where I grew up, Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, is the highest per capita crime rate in Canada.
Woohoo!
Because when they let people out of the pen, they just let them out with $75 and they go, have fun.
Yeah, like, yeah.
So they just all stick around.
Yeah.
And lots of them get great jobs and lots of them don't have a lot of options. And so they go back to a life of crime, unfortunately.
That's actually one of the things I found really awesome about the San Quentin system is that it's such a positive system, and a lot of the guys that were working down those levels were really – so the guy I met that had murdered a police officer, he has since started a program because he committed crime because the only option for his life was to join a gang and go to prison. And that's all he could do, and he couldn't see another future, so that's what he did. And basically what he did was create a program for youth to then – educate them. And how he says we are trying to help young people find their talents, because if I had been able to find my talent, then I would have had something to invest in. So he's created this program from inside of prison to help people outside of prison. And he's not the only one. It's just a ton. That's just how the system was. And we said, how often do you have like a massive fight, you know, like in the movies? And they're like, basically never. It's just a positive thing. And then they really do prepare people to leave. You know, they're trying to get people to leave and then never come back. So it's just, you know, you can only do so much with everything that exists and resources and such. But I was really impressed with sort of how that works. Is it's not so much about hand somebody $75 and say good luck. It's they actually really do try. So I hope to go back because it was really great. I would love it.
Hope to go back as a tourist.
I'd have to go back and leave later that day. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Amazing.
So speaking of things that are positive environments that are simulations of incarceration, how's tour been?
Same. Yeah. tour is good. Do you want to... Are we just transitioning into this?
I think we are. Okay. So Kayla and I usually do a little chit-chat at the beginning of our episodes, but we have not been able to do that because we have been recording separately. We sort of gave you guys a heads up that there would be a change in the format for season two, partially because Kayla and I are both now on the road full-time for a little while, and also because you got to hear our opinions for all of season one, and now it was time for Kayla and I to start listening more and talking less. But we understand that you miss us, and you don't know what's going on. They do.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks, everyone.
We see it in the Facebook messages.
Oh, I don't even pay attention anymore.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one reading those.
Thank you. Yes, so we're going to interview each other.
Cool.
That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Who's going first?
You said you wanted to go first.
Yeah. Great. I have my little written notes. All right.
Great.
So I'm going to interview Carissa first. 3, 2, 1. It's Shazam, the podcast hopes make us. Oh no, we already did that. Just for. Okay. Hello, Carissa. Welcome to Shazam.
Oh, I feel very welcome.
Okay, I'm trying my best.
You're doing great.
How are you? This is a terrible interview so far. Okay, you ready? So here are some questions that I wrote down for you, Carissa. One, great. You are in Chicago.
Yes. Are these all yes or no questions?
That wasn't a question. It was just mainly a statement that required your confirmation. But yes, the entire interview is going to last 30 seconds. Amazing.
Perfect. This is going to be great. That's how much time I have.
Oh, good. Because you're working. What are we talking about? Carissa, you have been in Chicago performing at the Chicago Magic Lounge for all of your life.
Every day I've ever remembered living.
Yes. Which, I mean, hey, not a bad place to only have a life, the Chicago Magic mm-hmm. Lounge. What a place.
True.
So it's a pretty rare opportunity that magicians would have to be able to perform every day of their lives, if they so wish, for like mm-hmm. an actual audience, not for their friends or family or just working on something in their mirror. This is an actual opportunity to perform every single day. And every week you've been performing your hour plus, hour 20 minute show. So mm-hmm. let's go with just your hour and 20 show. How has that developed over your chunk of time in Chicago?
Massively. So first of all, last Wednesday was my 9th Wednesday in a row out of 11. So I have 2 more left. And last week was the first time I kind of felt like the show had its groove. The cool thing has been that I didn't just do the show on the Wednesdays. I've been doing every Wednesday for the last 9 Wednesdays. But also I got to do the Women in Magic weekend. And Wednesday is a weird day for a performance because you get a lot of retired people and you get a lot of unemployed people. You get a lot of people who, like, the kind of people that go in on a Wednesday are unusual. And so the makeup of the audience is a little more timid. And because I got a good review from Chris Jones, the audience has been populated primarily with, like, theater-going audiences. So people that normally go see, like, Shakespeare in the Park or Hamilton, they are here on Wednesday to see me. And so the audience has been great, very attentive, sold out every single night, wonderful, warm, but not loud, not big, giant laughs, like not what I'm used to. And so I started to internalize some of that fear that I wasn't as funny as I normally am. It was still going really well. Like the show is going really well. The cool thing about these audiences is that they're extraordinarily smart. So the conversations I have with people after the show, I stick around and I say hi to everyone. The things they pick up in the show, like they're getting all of the literary references and all of the stuff I've hidden in it because I've tried to make the show a little bit more highbrow. But then I got to do it on the weekend. And oh my goodness, I realized that these Wednesday shows have been like weight training. Like I've been doing my hour with ankle weights on and with a full backpack full of camping gear. Because then when it was a weekend show and I had a Friday night crowd, a Friday night comedy club going, improv loving crowd, it felt like they were so loud at one point on the Saturday. It hurt my ears. Like they were so loud. It was so cool to be like, oh, okay. All right. So it's not just been valuable to do the show every week and kind of have it grow. It's also been valuable to do the show every week with these specifically Wednesday crowds because you have to build something out of nothing and like bring energy that the room doesn't already have. And it's just harder. They just need more from you. And so now I feel like I go out on stage and I'm just so much bigger than I used to be and so much more precise and careful. And I don't know, like everything has just gotten tighter. Mm. And I filmed the show 5 times with 3-camera shoot, and I've recorded the audio of every single show. And I listened to the audio from the first show and I listened to the audio from the latest shows. And I can hear this extraordinary difference. I'm saying the same words, but they have more substance now because I believe them in a way I didn't before, and I'm invested in a way that I wasn't before because the audience was sort of demanding that from me. And I mean, I love performing in venues all over this country. We're so lucky to get to do so, and like big theaters are fantastic. But I find like once you get past 180 people, it's just always kind of the same audience within reason. Because then you get into that room full of very big numbers and the audience kind of just turns into this force, which is great for them, but it's such a skill-building thing to work in small rooms where everyone is here on a Wednesday and and it is already past their bedtime. And the last thing that they went out to go see was ballet. And now they're coming to see this drag queen magician make fun of the front row for an hour and 20 minutes. And they're there for it. They've been fantastic. And because also my show sold out so early, it has this prestige now that I have to live up to. Like, I have to make sure that the show feels like the kind of show that would sell out. So I've been doing things and adding lighting cues and adding sound cues and trying to add production value because I feel like that's what this show demands. So it's been good. It's been a lot, but I'm in a really good place with it because I feel like for the first time this last week, I kind of looked at the whole thing and went, okay, I built something. I have an hour and 20 minute show that has a beginning, middle, and end, and it's good. And I'm super proud of it.
Nice. What do you feel like is now the strongest part of your act or the thing that you most love doing, something that might have developed in this time?
Oh, improv and crowd work, for sure. That's my favorite part. And whereas before, it was the thing that I knew other people liked about my act, but I hated doing it.
Which was?
Because it was all of the improv stuff. It's part of why after the first year of doing Lucy, I wrote out all the improv. I was like, okay, good. I'm a better writer now. I don't have to do this. And then other people missed it, and I've put it back in. Now there's a whole kind of two whole routines in my shows that are 80% improvised minimum. So that means I'm going out on stage realizing like 35% of my show, I don't know what I'm going to say. And I used to have this like weird dichotomy where like I knew that was everybody else's favorite part of the show, but it was my least favorite part of the show. Now I like it as much as they like it. And so I feel like I'm meeting people at their level. Like I really enjoy going out there and being like, look how smart I am. Yeah, I'm so fast. Give me something. I can weave anything into a joke. No problem. And like I said, it's like weight training. I got here and I was pretty quick and I think I'm quicker. I'm not the quickest, but I'm up there, man. I'm pretty quick.
Before you came into Chicago, what do you think was the weakest part of the show? Something that has either developed into not being the weakest or that has just developed into not being so weak? Like, what do you think was the part of the show that was lacking?
A sound and light. Sound and lights, for sure. My show was basically a street show I put on a stage. It had no sound cues, no light cues. I never took advantage of any of that. And people brought it up to me all the time. And I just felt like, you know, I come from sideshow. I come from street. I don't need lighting cues. I don't need sound effects. I'm whatever. There were 4 cues when I started the show. There are now 24, 25 cues between like little, and I mean, you saw it, Kayla, like little sound effects and little lighting trends, just little things. And one basically got added every week, or one or two. And now I look at the show and I'm like, this thing looks like classy and expensive. And I was wrong. This is really essential. Even a show like mine that's just talking and like jokes, lighting and sound, it's like a whole other character in the show now. And it really creates a strong sense of fantasy.
Do you feel like that's still something that you want to develop further? Do you feel like you're happy with what it's looking like?
I think it's fine.
Cool.
I had Ryan, actually, it's funny, I'm looking at it right now. I had Ryan build me a cue sheet of all the cues we developed with all of the notes. I'm just showing Kayla over Skype, like there are 5 pages of cue notes.
It's great.
And it's a good start, but I think once I've got the video, I'm going to kind of go through it and see if there's anything else we can add. I mean, too much is too much, right? You don't want to have a thing every 10 seconds because it weakens the value. But I think I'd love to do more research, maybe. Maybe not so much put more cues in the show, but understand lighting and sound better. So kind of see if I can find an online course or something that would... So I'm not just not being like... Because it's amazing how often I had to look at Brian and be like, okay, so I want it to feel like, you know, whooshy. Can you make a whooshy look?
Whooshy.
That's not a word, but he knew what I meant. Now I talk more in terms of, oh, can we bring the blues up 10%? Like, I'm already better at asking for what I need in the language that lighting and sound actually works in. But I still often, you know, there's that romantic cue. And I remember being upstairs with Ryan and being like, hey, can we do like some kind of like lighting transition to reinforce the sound transition that we're doing? Like something like, ooh la la. And I was like, that's not a lighting cue. Ooh la la is not a lighting cue. You know, and I'm not always going to have somebody that can like translate my onomatopoeia into visual. So I need to learn how to talk like a lighting person.
So you've been performing basically every day. Sometimes multiple times a day. As someone who also has had this schedule, I understand. But it's good because you're in one venue, which is really great. How have you personally saved yourself from burning out? Or have you? What have you done to not burn out? Or have you done nothing and now are very much looking at me going, shoot, I should have thought about this 9 Wednesdays ago.
Okay, so there have been a couple of things that I have tried. And I think I have avoided burnout. I'm getting close to it again. I can like feel it in my body when it's getting to be too much. Because last weekend I flew to Canada to do a couple of shows and see my dad. This weekend I'm flying to a different place in Canada to do this big fundraiser we do every year. And I have to build like 4 giant custom balloon costumes. And then I'm here for a day. And then I'm in Texas doing the Gearbox party. And then I'm back here working the weekend. So this month is pretty crazy. This month is like kind of my typical touring schedule. But up until now, I've basically been in one place, which has been really nice. And I've been saying that it's been really good for my mental health. Because what has happened is when you're on the road, and Kayla, I'm sure you understand this. When you're on the road, it's very easy to not notice a lack of patterns because nothing is consistent. So now that things are consistent, it's been easier to – and I have like a sleep tracker, like a Fitbit to track my sleep. And I haven't had to wear it because I can actually keep track of my sleep because I'm sleeping in the same bed every night. And so I've been getting more sleep. I've been eating better. I have basically stopped drinking within reason because there's like you get one cocktail a night at the Chicago Magic Lounge if you work. And the first couple weeks I took that every night. And now maybe once every 3 days I'll have my shifty. But I've tried to really avoid alcohol just while I'm here. I've been trying to get more sunlight, which is hard because I stay in a basement suite in Chicago. I work evenings.
It's cold.
It's very cold. So like little bits of sunlight, like it's a nice day. I'll go out of my way to walk to Mariano's. I try not to have more than a day or two of groceries in the house outside of my Soylent. So I have emergency food if I need it. But if I don't have any food, it forces me to walk to Mariano's, which is a nice little walk and get some sunlight and, you know, get some exercise. And the other thing here is that the community of the lounge is really fantastic, but they are like a work friend situation. And I just kind of didn't have any like outside contact. So I made some new friends, non-magician friends, still showbiz friends. So I still get it, but just not necessarily directly connected to magic so that if I'm doing magic every single day, I can go hang out with people that are going to talk about showbiz from a different angle and not have to show them anything to do with cards, which will be really nice. Yeah, so I think it's – I've been pretty good at like managing stress and managing my emotional health because I've been staying in one spot. And I'm genuinely worried about January, February, and March because January and February, March, I'm not anywhere for more than a week for a while basically, which I was fine with. But now that I know what it's like to not be in that situation, I'm a little nervous. So I'm just going to, you know, just monitor everything and keep tracking.
Yeah.
Hopefully it will be fine.
It'll be great. Okay. That's a good transition into page 2. So how long ago did you go, I'm homeless?
A year and a half ago.
So a year and a half ago, you were like, bye-bye home.
Bye-bye home. Things in a storage unit.
Great. Yep. Now that you've been in Chicago and had sort of a home base, like you do actually have a place to live that you can leave all of your stuff, are you at all thinking that you want to go back to having a home? Do you have any idea? Are you still loving the idea of not having a place? What's your feelings? Tell us all about your feelings.
I feel like even though I have a place here in Chicago, like I haven't taken my clothes out of my suitcase.
Yeah, I understand you.
Yeah.
I go to my actual home that I pay rent in and I still don't. None of my toiletries come out of the toiletry bag. Everything lives in the suitcase. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that says all we need to say. Like I have an emotional home here in Chicago and I have an emotional home in Los Angeles and I have an emotional home in Canada, but I don't have a physical home. My mailing address is my dad's house and technically that's where I live. But I don't. I'm on the road all the time. And I feel like this has just been like a long vacation that involved work. Like I never did settle here. So nothing has really changed emotionally. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. I'm going to go back on the road, live out of a suitcase. Nothing's going to change. My concern is that I've gotten really used to like planes this last week. All right. Kayla and I are going to talk about something that is a little first world problem-y. This last week, I flew a few times. And so I decided to spring for the business class and the lounge access. And it was the kind of difference that I was not expecting.
Mm.
Basically, it meant that I could land and hit the ground running in a way that I couldn't when I was a little more stressed out and sitting and eating bad food in the airport and sitting on an uncomfortable chair. So like there, I laid down. I took a nap in the lounge. There's a bed. I considered taking a shower. I didn't, but just the thought that I could have a shower was somehow like a fabulous revelation. So now I'm thinking about it. It's about $800 to pay for a year of lounge access.
That's it?
Yeah.
On what airline?
I think the American and the United are both like $800 a piece. Yeah. Yes. So exactly, Kayla. This is why I was like, I should mention this to Kayla. In fact, I found a deal, which I will send you, Kayla, for a little less than that. And I was doing the math and I'm like, for how much I fly, it's going to work out to like $20 a flight. So maybe I just – and then – but it locks you into an airline. But it's stuff like that that now I'm going, okay, now that I've stayed in one place for a while and I've kind of learned to not have to be on a plane constantly – going back to that life where it's on a plane every week, twice a week, this idea of trying to find a way to make it more luxurious is really appealing to me because I think I need to change the way I feel about flying. Because right now it's something I a little bit dread. And, you know, the luggage that we have has really changed that because now, like, our luggage is such a joy.
Yeah, that's so true.
And our shoes are a joy. And even our coffee cups. Kayla and I have this same really luxurious coffee cup. And those little luxuries really make, at least for me, a huge difference in my mental health. And so now I'm thinking, okay, what's the next step? Probably airport lounge access.
Are you actually – this is a selfish question. Are you actually locked in to that airline or can you go into that lounge even if you don't fly that airline but you're in the same terminal?
So it really depends on the airport. And also there are all these other lounge accesses. Like there's other lounges that don't belong to either, but either card will get you in.
Got it.
So it really depends on what airports you fly in through most of the time. In my opinion, I've been researching both and it looks like United might be a slightly better
deal. I have experienced the United lounge before through traveling with someone and it is fantastic.
It's really great.
Yep.
It's really great. So I tried them all out now. I paid like the day pass, which is like only $50 to $100 for each of them, which is still a lot. But for me, it was worth paying here and there to kind of get a sense of it. And so that I feel like I'm making an educated investment rather than like a who knows. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It's wonderful. Okay. So my goal was to hit 20 minutes, which means going to 20 minutes – lightning round.
Yay.
Woo.
You're so organized, Kayla.
I did plan for about 20 minutes before talking to you. All right, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Wigs or no wigs?
Always wigs. Then you don't have to wash your hair.
That's terrible. I don't have to. I put mine in a ponytail. I never wash my hair.
Yeah, we both have solutions. Mine is wigs.
All right. Well, mine doesn't cost $300.
Yeah, it's really expensive. Okay. So they're YouTube commenters on my Fool Us thing. Ah. This is a cheap wig.
Nope, it's very pricey.
It's okay. Very expensive.
All right, Carissa picks wigs. Big or small dogs?
Oh, damn it. That's not a real question. All dogs. All every right. dog.
You can say that. It's fine. I would have also taken Bowie.
Bowie. I do choose Bowie. I always choose Bowie.
Thank you.
For sure.
Old fashions or Negronis?
Oof. Negronis right now.
Did you see my picture about the white Negroni that's in this hotel?
I did.
I might get one just for you. It looks really good, actually.
Yes, please. Mm-hmm. Yes. There was a pineapple Negroni. My best friend Simon and I went for cocktails in Calgary. He took me to this super posh cocktail lounge. He was like, I'm taking you to the most LA place I could find in Calgary. And I'm like, all right. Thank you, Simon. But they had pineapple Negronis.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. It was so subtle.
Oh, that's just so what I'm going to get tonight, isn't it? Okay. Hypothetical. If suddenly you are in your apartment and there was an electricity blackout, what do you do to entertain yourself?
I'm just about to finish the Del Odell book. So I would say Carissa Hendricks in a bathtub, two lit candles, and the last 13 pages of the Del Odell book.
That's very nice. Very relaxing. Mm-hmm. Self-care. I like it. What's your ideal number of seats, your ideal size in a theater to perform in or space?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I like anything between 500 and 40. Ideal is tough to say because I like it all for different reasons. I love a room full of 40 people because there's like an intimacy that is so like lovely and delicious. But then there's also something wonderful about like 400 people where they're just a mob. And like if you get 400 people laughing really hard, that laugh goes on forever. Like I love a laugh that makes itself laugh,
yes.
You know, and you only get that in a room full of 400 people where like they're laughing at how hard they're laughing. So they're both fabulous. I'm bad at questions. They're all great.
All right, last one, another hypothetical. Let's say that you've clogged your hotel room toilet and you don't want to call down to the hotel maintenance because you're kind of embarrassed about it.
Hey, Kayla.
So what do you do? Nope, let me finish the question. So what do you think is the best solution? Do you use like a – yes, Carissa.
Did you clog your hotel room toilet?
I don't need to answer that.
Did something happen? Yeah. Okay, so there are some options.
Do I just go get a Coke?
You could. You could disintegrate. It depends on how big the clog is. Is it like
physical? I don't know. I think it's toilet paper.
Okay, it's just toilet paper. So toilet paper will disintegrate over time. So you can probably just leave it and then try to flush it later and it'll be fine. An option, I know this sounds really gross, an option is to physically like empty what's in the bowl. And then poke it. I know that doesn't sound great. But realistically, your best option is just to call maintenance. That kind of stuff happens in hotels all the time and they're used to it. And you know what you could do if you're embarrassed? You can say, hey, there's a problem with my plumbing in my bathroom. I'm leaving for 3 hours. If it could be fixed by the time I get back, that would be fantastic. And then you don't have to be there.
That's such great advice if this ever were to happen for anybody.
Yeah. That's great.
Someone that's so not in Canada.
Yeah. Also, around. They're Canadians. They're honor bound to be polite. They're not going to say or do anything.
Can I just go borrow a plunger?
No, just call down to the front desk and say that you're having plumbing issues and then leave. Just go to the pool or something. Go to the business center and hide.
All right, fine. Well, that's the end of my portion of the interview.
Okay, Kayla, you ready?
Don't ask me about the toilet in this interview.
I think we don't have to. I think we know exactly what's going on.
No, no one knows me. You don't know my life.
So, Kayla, I'm super interested in finding out more about your tour, and I think everybody else is also safe for the toilet issues, because your crew has really become a family, and it was so lovely when you were in Chicago for 10 minutes to get to meet Fernando and kind of see the way you guys were together, and you're like siblings now. Mm-hmm. So how has creating this internal tour culture, how has that evolved from a year ago or even longer to now? Like, where is your little tour family?
Well, I know when I came into the show, for whatever reason, and I think it was just a reason based off of sort of time, not all the personalities really had the chance to click. So when I came in, there was definitely like a non-existent camaraderie. Like nobody really talked to each other. There were, you know, two of the guys were friends and that was about it. So it was just this weird like thing. And then my first run of shows with everybody was over the holidays. So people's families were in town. So I was just like, I'm alone. So there really wasn't that opportunity to like really get to know or bond with each other. And then we spent 6 weeks on a bus with each other in the UK, sharing space, sharing odors, sharing things.
Toilets.
Yep. And then throughout that, yeah, sharing toilets. That's just going to keep coming up.
I'm done.
All right. I'm going to see if I'll bring it up anymore. And throughout the UK tour, I particularly bonded with one person in the group. And that's just because we have the same sort of lifestyle and schedule of drinking coffee and then going out for a glass of wine or whatever it is. And so you just sort of find your people. And then slowly we all just started hanging out. And, you know, what happens is we all do a show together and we all want the show to be good. It's not just about individual acts being good, because if one act is brilliant but one act is bad, that doesn't make the show good. And the goal is people stand at the end of it and have a good time, and all of us have to be good. And so it just slowly developed over time that we just really clicked in, and we all are very different but also have similar ambitions and similar wants with this tour. So through that, you learn about each other outside of work, and in a way you just fall in love with each other. You know, it's just this group is – and this includes the crew. This is not just the cast. The cast and the crew are all friends. We all are close. We all hang out together. We all play games. We all drink. We all go for meals. Like, it's – there's no divide, even though we have different schedules and different jobs. It's like we all want the show to be good. And because of that, we all just got really, really close. And there is a very strange connection that exists between the group of us that you just can't get outside of this group. It's like we're the only people that get it. This is the only group of people that get what's going on. And to have that is so amazing. And you're right, is that like, you know, being with Fernando is – Fernando is not someone I would ever have hung out with, even though he lives down the street from me. Is Fernando is my little brother, because we get to have this experience together. And because of that, it's the same as like if you go to Disneyland for a day with someone, all of a sudden you guys are just a little bit closer, but it's Disneyland every day here. So and that includes like there are lots of fights and arguments, and there are days where you just want to quit and go home, and there are days where you really despise that one person because of that thing they said and blah blah blah, and then you just kind of let it go, or you vent about it to somebody, and then the next day it's done. And you move on. You can't hold grudges when you're on tour, but there's no time or energy. So you just move on to the next thing. And that's really great, is that this group, basically everybody in the group is really good at that. So it's also this – our producer's done a really good job of assembling a team of like-minded people. And because of that, we are able to be successful.
Excellent. So you're kind of also living a double life right now, because you have these long stints where you're on the road and then you go home for like a week, 2 weeks, sometimes longer. And then you have to go back to being LA home person, traditional life, Kayla. So how do you manage those two identities? Do you feel like you're the same person on the road that you are at home? Do they feel like different people? Do they need different things? Has the road changed you? And so now home is weird.
Well, you know all of those answers, so I'm just
kidding. Yes, but our listeners don't.
This is going to sound kind of bad, because I have the job that every magician wants. I have the opportunity that every magician hopes and dreams to have. And it sounds really dumb that I would have any sort of gripe or complaint about it, because we remind each other of this all the time when we're like, I just don't want to perform today. We go, hey, you could be doing strolling magic at a kid's Christmas party right now. Is that what you want to be doing? No, of course not. I want to be doing this. This is everything. But it really does come with a lot of difficulty that you're not prepared for, because there isn't like a book or a resource and nobody really talks about it, because so few people get to do this. And that is that when you are on tour and the only thing that you have to care about is the thing that you love most, which is performing, and you are taken care of, you know, you just have to make sure you eat and like have self-care. But outside of that, it's like you're just focused on this show and this family that is created, and that's it. That's your only responsibility. And then all of a sudden you go home and you walk in the kitchen and nobody stood for you just for walking in the kitchen. And you have to focus on cooking and cleaning, and you have to hang out with people that don't understand what your life is like. And then you just don't want to hang out with them anymore because they just don't get it. And then you – it's just like, well, what do I do today? Because if I'm not performing, what's the point? And even doing smaller shows that aren't the tour end up being not as satisfactory. So you have to work a little bit extra hard to make sure that other shows that you're doing outside of the tour are still fun and still bring you just as much joy as they did before. And what ends up happening is you just get very, very sad. And we all have gone through it, especially the performers. It just doesn't feel like home is real life. And it's really hard to explain that to the people who are in your home life, because you don't want it to sound like it's their fault. It has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with just this is the lifestyle now. But it's incredibly difficult to go, I don't want to be home. I want to be on the road and I want to be doing this show and I don't want to be here, because it doesn't make any sense. Like being home and everything just is so weird now because nothing about it makes sense. Walking the dog doesn't make sense. Cooking is confusing. Like, well, it's always been confusing. I just burn everything I put in the oven. But so it just is, it's so strange. And you know, I've said this before to you, but I really understand why musicians go on tour and then end up just doing drugs all of the time, because you have to maintain that high. And when you're done with a show, like when we do a show here and then we're done and go back to your hotel room and you're alone, there's all of a sudden this terrible crash of like you just went from this super high to now being by yourself in a hotel room, maybe a crap hotel. You know, you don't know what you're going to be doing. And it's all of a sudden, like, luckily everybody here is great. We all make sure that everybody's good. Like, if you want to be alone, it's great. But also, if you don't want to be, everybody's here for you. So you can always go out for a meal or a drink or watch a movie with somebody or something just to, like, slowly come off of the high as opposed to a crash. Mm-hmm. But when you're home, it's just – you're just sort of living in the crash. There's just nothing as satisfactory as doing the tour. And so I've slowly – over the last year, after I realized all of this, slowly started trying to figure out what would make me happy at home. So as you know, Carissa, we got somebody to clean our home. So I don't have to do it. And I'm very happy to pay for it because it's just something I don't need to worry about. And then I can just come home and it's clean, just like I would if I were to leave my hotel room and come back and it's clean. It's just sort of that luxury. And I just won't cook. I just can't do it. I'm just like, nope. It's just, it brings me too much stress and frustration. I just will not cook, and I will continue to order food, and it's expensive and I don't care because I just can't do it. Or like I'll run across to the grocery store and grab something that's already made. So things like that, you know, you just try to implement the things that you get on tour while at home. All the performers, we do a really good job of, we all just talk all the time, even the crew as well. One of the performers and I, we occasionally have like a Skype meal. So we'll Skype from wherever he is, which is usually England. And we have this lovely meal together. And it's just like, oh, yeah, it's just like we're back on tour. So
that's nice.
It's really great. And I love – it's Richard Young. And I love having that with him because it's just a really awesome thing. And then two of the performers – it's now there are three of us that are from LA. And so what we do is we made sort of a pact, which is we go home and the next day we hang out. No questions asked. All three of us hang out. And it just sort of helps with that transition going back into home. But it is – I did not expect anything like this. And it is very difficult to continue your good mental health when you're on the road and especially when you're off. Some of the guys, they have kids. So I know that that's really helpful because they get to go home to this really awesome kid So that's really great. And I'm happy that I have great friends, a great partner, pretty great dog. So there are great things, you know, if you look at the things that are good, there are lots of good things, but it does become really hard to value those when it's just for more than half of the year that it's just not what you're focused on. So it does become really hard to create a balance, and it just takes a really long time, and it's not something that you can really study, or it hasn't really been studied. It has started to have been looked at. But it's just a really interesting thing I wasn't expecting to have to pay attention to. But you learn a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I obviously already have some insight into this. I just really thought it would be valuable to share with the listeners. I think, Kayla, your relationship with your tour life has really been interesting to watch from the outside for me, because I think you've become more conscious of it and more deliberate. And it stopped being something that happens to you and started being something that you make choices about, which has been really good for me to watch, because it's like, oh, wow, you have a lot more sense of control over it.
Yes.
Okay. What are the essential skills that someone would need if they wanted to live a life on tour in a group environment like you have?
So the first thing would be you need to have a short-term memory for problems, including in that you need to be able to deal with something that isn't just something you can fluff away. So sometimes I just get really mad at somebody because they said something, but it's not really a massive deal, and I just decide, you know what, I need to take a night away from that person and just kind of stew in my own anger at that mean thing they said. But they're not always that mean. It just was a mean thing. So I'm just going to go away, and then tomorrow I'll decide if I need to address it. And the next day I wake up and go, oh, totally forgot about it. It's all good. Or sometimes a mean thing is said, and the next morning I wake up and go, no, I'm still really upset. I do need to address it. Or if there's been a pattern, I need to make sure I address it. So you need to both have a short-term memory and be able to have sort of the confidence to approach somebody and say, I did not like this. This is how it made me feel, and we need to talk about it. And luckily in this group, everybody's really great, to where lots of apologies, including from myself, get thrown about regularly. And so we're lucky to sort of, again, be like-minded people. So everybody here gets it. And the second thing is you need to be self-aware. You need to be self-aware when you're on tour. You need to be self-aware to the point of understanding your own self-care. What does that look like? For me, it's working out and eating healthy. It's also spending the occasional day completely alone. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to be by myself and watch some movies or read a book or something. So I do try to do that, even if it's for a half a day, at least once a week, so that I can just leave sort of the thought process of it. So just being self-aware on what you need, but that also means being self-aware on your relationship to others. So not being too invasive in somebody else's personal time and space, understanding that if you're self-aware, you need to also be aware of how you affect others, and being self-aware enough to make sure that you shower regularly as much as possible.
Amazing. Fantastic. So in your performance on the road, you're doing two routines in the show, yes?
So I was doing three, which it's going to be shifting a little bit coming up. But as of right now, let's say I'm doing three full routines, and there you go.
Excellent. Which means that the audience has a lot more limited time to understand who you are and get to know you than they would necessarily in like a larger show. And also, you're trying to create a character that fits into the dynamic of everyone else. So have you found that your material has evolved based on trying to create a bigger impact in a smaller amount of time, or to try and distinguish yourself from the other people on tour? Or was that just a natural thing because the show is cast in a way that everyone's so inherently different?
One thing that I've learned in doing a show like this is that you have to get to the point very quickly. So I implemented a routine. It's like a card skill demonstration type of thing, but it's almost no effort to me, which I love. And the first round I did it, I tried to like rattle off these fancy statistics because I have a math brain, and like that would be fun to show everybody that I have a math brain. And you know what people don't care about? Math. So that was like a quick thing. As after I did the first time, I went, oh, this is so much talking. And friends and stuff and the producer were like, it was just, it's too much. So I just went, okay, how do I say what I want in three sentences? And so that's just what I did, is I just wrote three sentences, one of which is funny, and then got into the trick. And so it kind of went like that, as if you can – you really need to just nail it home in 3 to 5 sentences, and that it's good, especially in a show like this. In a longer show, you definitely have more room to sort of play with those things. So we all start the show on stage together. So we say, hi, I'm this person. So sort of in that, you kind of get a tiny little glimpse of what all of our personalities are going to be. And then when I come out and I'm like, hello, place that we're in. Yes. Before we start our adventure together, which is already like a weird way of saying, before I begin my act, so before we begin our adventure, I need to ask a favor, take you. Here's my three sentences, one of which is funny. And now I take it back. And now we're going into it. And then my little dance and all of that. It just shows that I'm like a fun person. And I think that is just a natural thing. I just sort of deliver the lines in that way. And the way I write script-wise, it's just all delivered as I would talk normally. So hopefully, I think anyway, it's very clear very, very quickly within 30 seconds who I am. And then that just sort of develops as you see me interact with other people in the audience. I do have the advantage of going into the audience and interacting with people. And so you get to see my personality while seeing a relationship develop between me and another person. So that's very helpful for an audience to sort of fall in love with you, to see how you react with a 6-year-old kid. Is it makes it pretty easy if you know what you're doing, which I think I have that pretty developed and stuff. So it works really well. Hopefully that does come across as well as I think it does. And so that's very helpful. But what I did learn is that you really do have to just – you got to get to it in a show like this. There's no time. You just have to go, 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 and then go from there. So yeah, I think it's – my material choices, even choices, like I've started implementing the salt shaker. Ooh. So the salt shaker is going to become a new permanent resident in the show, which I'm really excited about. And there's eventually going to be, hopefully, a version of the floating phone that doesn't require a yes. phone to float. It's floating stuff, when you go theater to theater, is next to impossible. So sorry to say for everyone that will have listened to a previous podcast, and also Eric Tate's podcast of me on the Penguin Forum, is that I don't know if this floating phone thing is ever going to come to fruition, at least not in the near future, because when you go theater to theater, it's next to impossible to have to worry about lighting thread. So I've kind of put it on the back burner for right now, but there is a really cool version of – I'm taking out the floating portion, and I'll tell you about it off pod, Carissa, but I'm really excited for the combination of the salt shaker and the phone. I think it's going to be pretty cool. So hopefully that will be something to work in, but sooner than later, the salt shaker is going in, and I performed it as I normally perform it in a close-up setting of 30 to 50 people, and it died a terrible death because you got to get – you have to just go. There's no time to set up a scenario and tell a story and tell these jokes. It's like you just have to go with it. We also tried to do this cool angle thing with the camera and it really didn't work and lots of other stuff. So I've totally revamped how it's going to look on stage and I'm excited to try it out, see how it goes. But yeah, choosing material, especially doing close-up, you know, if you're doing illusions, it's pretty – takes a lot of work, but an illusion's an illusion. Doing close-up in a theater with 2,000 seats ends up being very difficult when it comes to material choice. And I've tried to put stuff in before and it just hasn't worked. So the salt shaker, it went well. It's just like we have to make some massive changes to it to be actually a good finale for me. But I'm excited for what that will look like and hopefully it'll be soon. But yeah, it's just different. You have to really pay attention. And that's part of that self-awareness I was talking about.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I'm excited to hear off pod. I'm like, I kind of like, now I just want to get to the lightning round so that yay! I know what this trick is about. So we're going to go into the lightning round.
Woohoo!
Question number one, what is the best hotel room you've stayed at on this tour so far?
I was just in Syracuse, New York, and I got upgraded to their big, big, big suite, which had a couch and a chaise lounge. And then I got a free bottle of wine and a big bathtub. It's a tie between that and then Biloxi, Mississippi, which had a bathtub the size of a hot tub with like jets and everything. And that was really ooh. Nice. So it's kind of between
I
the two.
Love a jacuzzi.
Yeah, a lot of times it comes down to that bathtub or the shower in general. And the shower in Biloxi was also really good. So between the two.
Amazing. Favorite travel item that you have with you currently?
Oh, no. I mean, can I just say all of my away luggage?
Yeah, totally.
It might be all my away luggage. I have to go get my big one replaced because the zipper is a little broken. And I'm excited for that experience. It's between my Olay luggage and my platypus water bottle because that is so handy to travel with when you get into an airport and just fill it up and it's so easy.
That's great. Okay, next question. What is the best theater to perform in so far on your tour?
Selfishly, I really liked the Bluma Appel Theater in Toronto because it was about 800, 900 seats. But because of the union there, it was really frustrating to perform there. But once the shows got going, it was great. Maybe. We just performed at the Surgestrom Theater in Costa Mesa, California. And that was such a rush because it was massive and there were like 3,000 people. And that was great. I don't know. It's hard to say. We've played a lot of the Fox theaters, the Fox Detroit, Fox Atlanta. Those are 5,000 seats and we did pretty well there. So it's tough. That's a very difficult decision. Probably the most beautiful theater was the Fox Atlanta. Beautiful. Excellent. There's a picture on my Instagram of me, our producer Alex Jarrett, and Sam Strange, if you really want to see it, where you can see the theater. And it's like, oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah, it's probably the best.
Best vegan on the road so far? Best vegan food?
Vegan food. I mean, anywhere that has a good oat milk latte wins the day. Best vegan food. Yeah, it might be Toronto again. Toronto had both vegan Chinese and this vegan burger milkshake place that was amazing. I think Toronto might win that one too.
Like a Toronto Monty's?
Yeah, but yes, it was a Toronto Monty's. Yeah.
Cool.
It was amazing.
I wish I knew that when I was traveling through Toronto a few weeks ago. Okay, last one. Does Bowie need a friend? Like a little animal friend?
Like a – what are you talking about?
Should he have a friend, like a lizard friend or another puppy?
I think Bowie might be incapable of having animal friends because he tends to just tear them to shreds. But he has a lot of people. Why? You want? What do you want?
I don't know. I just want more cuddly friends.
Bowie is 70 pounds. He's plenty. Also, he hates animals. And I think that if we had, I did debate being like, can we get another lizard? But I think Bowie would destroy it. So.
Damn it. All right.
It's best for everyone that Bowie remains by himself. But he loves his people.
Yeah. I miss him. But I also have lately been like, what if there were more animals for me to cuddle with? Who do I know that can handle more animals?
No one.
Probably Kayla. No, I think you can. Okay, so that those are all my questions.
Yay, we did it.
I think we did it. This is great.
So because we are in this new format doing a lot more interviews, if you do have anybody that you can think of that you would like to hear from, shoot us an email or something to let us know. We have gotten a few requests, and a few of those I have very blatantly said absolutely not to. Won't say who that was, but just know that we have the veto power. But email us anyway, and maybe we can get that going. Or not. If it depends on what I feel like. Come on now. That was Kayla being a little Kayla. And then, yeah, reminder, we have swag.
We just got enamel pins. They are fabulous.
They're so cool.
Yeah, we're going to put them up on the website for purchase starting the day this is released or a day before that. Take a look at them. We ordered, I think we have 100 available before we sell out. Based on how my enamel pins did before, my first run sold out in a day. I imagine the Shazam ones will be very similar. So if you're interested in a very pretty, really well-made, high-end Shazam enamel pin, go over to shazampod.com and get yours.
And that's the end, I think, of the episode.
I think we're good. I think we did all the things.
Can't believe it.
Thank you for joining us for this very special episode of Shazam. And remember,
get your Contigo coffee mugs, your platypus water bottles, your Away luggages, your enamel pins that say Shazam, and all of your mental health needs. And then you can go on tour. Also, maybe then join a tour and go on tour.
Go join a tour. And giant thank you to the SAM for sponsoring this episode, as well as the past episodes of Shazam. We are so grateful for our wonderful relationship with the SAM. It has made it possible for us to continue to do this podcast into this year, realistically, because of how busy Kayla and I were. So we're very grateful, and I'm sure you are too. So go out and join a club. They are a lovely organization, and we are both grateful to be part of it.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Stop.
And stop.